Hey, welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us here. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m., and our mission is to sort of follow the money and keep you posted. My guest today is Arthur Stein. He's a certified financial planner based in, are you in Gaithersburg, Maryland?
Bethesda, Maryland.
Okay. And he's come down to the studio that made the long trek from Bethesda to D.C.
A lot of traffic,
yes. Yeah, that pre-inaugural traffic. Before we get rolling, would you give us your contact information?
Yeah, it's my website is arthursteinfinancial.com, www.arthursteinfinancial.com, arthursteinfinancial.com. And my email address is art@arthursteinfinancial.com.
Great, okay. And today's column, my Federal Report column, the subject is the Thrift Savings Plan. And after a long drought and a long, scary recession, suddenly the numbers, the 2012 numbers, looking very good indeed. 12 to 18% increase in 2012 in the C, which is the stock S&P 500 fund. The S fund, which is small caps, I guess that's the rest of the U.S. market, and then the I fund, international. It's a very broadly based international stock fund, and while they're high risk, they're also high reward, and that's where people who are looking to make money tend to go. But got a couple of good questions prompted by the column, and let me dispose of these first because they're very good. One is from Lauren, and she is in Beltsville, and she says, I hate, loathe, despise investing. I do my own taxes. Don't mind that too much. It's not the numbers per se that are the problem, but investing to me is like basketball. Ugh. So a while ago, I decided to forget it and put all new contributions into one or two of the L funds and call it a day. That said, I don't move my money around in response to the market, not one bit. So she's talking about the L funds as in life cycle, and those are target date funds. So you decide what's closest to the year that you're going to start withdrawing the money, as opposed to retiring, because it may be different. And then you go into a 2050 fund or a 2040 or the year 2030. And what are these target funds?
Well, the target funds are just a way of changing your investment allocation over time. And when the target date fund is first introduced, and let's say it was like the 2050 fund, it starts out with 80% of the investments in stocks, which is the C and the S and the I fund, and the other 20% in the F fund, which is bonds, and the G fund, which is kind of like a money market account with a great rate of return. And then every quarter, over the time period, they gradually shift into a higher percentage of investments in the F and the G funds and a lower percentage in the C and the S and the I funds.
So it gets more conservative over time.
It gets more conservative. And so, for instance, the 2050 fund, when 2050 rolls around, that fund will be 80% in the G and the F fund, and as a matter of fact, it's almost all G. I think it's 74% G and 6% F, and 20% in the C and the S and the I fund. And that strategy assumes that people want to be in less volatile investments as they approach retirement, and that really the only financial risk is volatility, how much your investments are going to fluctuate in value. Because the C and the S and the I fund fluctuate a lot more in value and by greater amounts in the F fund, and the G fund doesn't fluctuate in value at all. It's, like a money market fund. Problem is, people need to think about why are they investing this money. And the reason they're investing the money is because when they're retired, they expect to reach a point where they can't live on their annuities and Social Security anymore, and they need to start taking money out of their investments to live on. And the problem with the G and the F fund, especially the G fund, is that the rate of return is too low to increase the purchasing power of the investment, so that the money you have in the G fund is gradually losing purchasing power over time. And this is a huge problem for retirees. I mean, I'm a financial planner. I help people manage their investments, but I also do retirement plans for them. And when we do a retirement plan, the first thing, the big issue is, are you going to be able to generate enough income from your investments to support you in retirement when you can no longer live on your pension and on your annuity and Social Security? The G fund is not going to do that. So I just did a very simple example, which is how many first-class stamps could you purchase with interest from the G fund? And I use first-class stamps because they deliver the exact same service every year. Mm-hmm. You know, one first-class stamp, you can mail a letter anywhere in the United States. You can't use cars or clothing or anything else because they change so much. In 1993, the interest from the G fund would have purchased if you invested $100 in the G fund, the interest would have purchased 21 stamps in 1993, would have been down to 16 stamps in 2001, and it would have been only 3 stamps last year. Well, you know, that's a
you can't
huge,
do that. Yeah,
that's like an 85% decrease in purchasing power over a 20-year period. And so these L funds, because you end up with such a high percentage, over 70% in the G fund, it means that 70% of your TSP balance is losing purchasing power every year.
Well, I'm thinking of the difference between the private sector and a federal worker, federal postal, whether they're under FERS or the CSRS program. In my case, I'm private sector, so when I retire, I will get Social Security, which will be indexed to inflation, and I will get a pension from my company, which is not indexed to inflation. So somebody like me is really going to need to rely on my 401k plan for that to make up that gap. As the years go on, my pension will remain the same, but prices will go up. Federal worker, postal employee, by contrast, if you're under CSRS, your annuity is fully indexed to inflation, and if you're under FERS, it's indexed minus a percentage point, but compared to everything else, that's a wonderful system. So I would think, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you're a federal or postal worker or even a retiree who's not tapping their money yet, you can afford to be take more risks in investing, can't you?
Yeah, well, you can, and many people do, treat their pension as, you know, their conservative investment. It's going to pay income every year like a bond investment would. Excuse me, but it's indexed to inflation, and it does allow you to be more aggressive. You can also be more aggressive if you're younger. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're 20 or 30 right. years old, you're looking very, 30, 40 years in the future. But even someone who's retiring needs to keep in mind that maybe they retire at 65. Some of the money they're going to be spending from their investments, they're going to be spending it in 20 years. And if they've been losing purchasing power every year for 20 years, that's a big problem. You know, we mentioned at the beginning of the show the rates of return for, were so high last year, 2012, for the C and the S and the I fund. To me, what's really significant, what's even more significant, is the 10-year average annual rates of return. Now, the official figures are not yet out from the TSP, but I ran an estimate of what, I expect them to be for the 10-year average annual rate of return. And they're going to be around 7% for the C fund, around 11% for S, around 8% for I, 5%, and this is the average annual return per year, for the F fund, and less than 4% for the G fund. And what's important about that is we've returned to what would have been considered normal, you know, more than 10 years ago, i.e. a situation where over long periods of time, stocks have significantly outperformed bonds. And that's why people invest in stocks, because stocks can increase your purchasing power even taking into account taxes and inflation.
Right. Got a question about losing your nerve in a tough market, but we need to take a short break here. Federal News Radio, we'll be right back.
The Washington region is made up of powerful people and powerful places. And now there's PowerJobs.com, a career site made just for Washington's top talent. Brought to you by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC7. PowerJobs.com specializes in jobs in Washington's most influential industries. Defense, energy, finance, government, healthcare, technology, and more. From companies like SAIC and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Finally, a career site made for you. PowerJobs.com, empowering today's top talent.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
Our children are exposed to violence every day in their neighborhoods, in their schools, even in their own homes. Exposure to violence can have a devastating and lifelong impact. Through community action and leadership at the national level, we're identifying the children who need our help. I'm Attorney General Eric Holder, and I'm asking those of you who have a role in a child's life to take action. Through your attention and early intervention, we can help children in need to heal, to thrive. Together, we can change their lives and their futures.
Visit justice.gov to join the Justice Department in defending childhood.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
This is an urgent message for all individuals with extremely large credit card debt. No matter how much you owe on your credit cards, the company that has settled more debt than anyone in the U.S. could settle your debt too. While you make one low monthly program payment, you have the opportunity to hear how low your monthly program payment could be for free. This free information is available now simply by calling Freedom Debt Relief at 1-800-700-6518. I repeat, if you have extremely large credit card debt, you now have the ability to reduce your total debt and get one simple low monthly program payment. This could allow you to resolve your debt faster than you ever thought possible. But you should act quickly. Call Freedom Debt Relief now to learn how much you could save. 1-800-700-6518. Again, this life-changing information is available for free. To find out how much you may be able to save, call today. 1-800-700-6518. That's 1-800-700-6518. 1-800-700-6518.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Join FCEA and the U.S. Naval Institute for West 2013, January 29th through 31st in San Diego. Focusing on the strategic shift to the Pacific, this conference and exposition features senior military and government speakers, as well as 6 panel sessions on budget, fiscal cliff, innovation, retention, cybersecurity, and China. Courses, career, and financial seminars, and Don CIO sessions round out the professional development offerings. Register today at westconfexpo.org.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He is a financial planner based in Bethesda, Maryland, and his handle is art at ArthurSteinFinancial.com.
That'll get you.
Art at ArthurSteinFinancial.com. And we'll post it on our website, too. This is a dream question, the one I wanted to ask you, but it actually comes from a real human being. John, he's with the defense school system in Europe, in Spegdalham Middle School in Germany. And he says, I have a diversified TSP account for many years, but I panicked during the recent fiscal cliff negotiations. I ended up putting everything in the G fund when a compromise did not seem likely. I'm almost 60, but don't plan to withdraw my TSP funds until I'm 70 and a half. Does your guest have any advice how I might return to the stock funds? And I would add that a lot of people did this in the year 2007 when the market tanked. And I know some people personally who said, I can't live with it. I can't stand this. And they got out of the stock market. And I, as far as I know, they haven't come back. I mean, getting out is fairly easy to decision. When to go back is tough. Right?
When to go back is extremely difficult because you're unlikely to go back when it's still down. And once it goes up, then you don't want to go back because then it seems like it's
you're
no longer
high,
a good deal.
Yeah.
But let me just say to John's question, I have a lot of clients, you know, who come in and that's where they are. They have most of their money in the G fund. And the first thing that I would suggest is allocate all your new contributions, the ones that are going in every 2 weeks, to the C and the S and the I fund. And that way, at least the new money is going into those funds. And, you know, if the market tanks again, that's good for you because you're investing. The money that's already in the G fund, you know, maybe put it, move 10% now, wait 3, 4, 5 months, whatever you want to do, move another 10%. You can get back in slowly. But, of course, if the market keeps going up, then you're losing money. If it goes down, then you're glad you did that. But that's the problem with pulling out. You pulled out all the money at once. It's hard to convince yourself to go back in with all your money at once. Now, the people that pulled out in, you know, 2007 and 8 and 9 or maybe in 2000 and 2001 – they've lost a tremendous amount of potential gain. The people pulled out in 2008 and 2009, if they had kept their money in the C and the S fund and the I fund, they would have more than doubled their money because that's how much those funds are up since they bottomed out. And that's a big loss, and it's hard to make up for a loss like that. And the gain, the comeback, historically – is not unusual. I mean, one of the best times to buy is after the market has tanked, after it's really gone down a significant amount, and then just hold on because the recoveries tend to be very high, very steep in terms of increases in stock prices. And, of course, when you're invested in stocks, certainly when you're invested in the C fund, you also benefit from the dividends paid by those companies. So even if the stock price isn't doing well, you're still getting dividends, and so you are still getting income.
Yes, I guess the 1930s was a good time to buy stocks if you had a job and had any money.
Right. If you weren't out on the street, if you weren't selling apples, it was a good time to buy stocks. You know, it kills me. I mean, it really upsets me when I meet, you know, federal workers, especially younger federal workers who are passing up the opportunity, you know, to put money in every 2 weeks in small amounts into these funds when they have very long-term time horizons. Now, there's no guarantee the stock funds are going to do well in the future. Past performance, no guarantee of future performance. But historically, you know, stocks have just outperformed everything else over long periods of time.
Yeah, and again, I guess this is one of the advantages of the target funds is that they'll do things that you wouldn't normally do in order to keep the portfolio balanced. They will sell when the stock is high, when most of us would say that's the time to be buying it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see that really as an advantage of the target date funds. To me, the target date funds are just putting people in an increasingly conservative portfolio, a portfolio that is less volatile but has a greater, a much lesser chance to keep up with the purchasing power, to increase your purchasing power. And I think, you know, most people cannot afford to be that conservative, especially early in their careers.
Well, I have a couple of friends who like the target fund idea, but they don't like the allocation of their particular target fund. So if they should be, if the numbers tell them they should be in the 2020 fund, they go into the 2030. So they start out with a more racier fund, if you will, a less conservative fund, and it builds. Now, what do you think about that?
You know, I understand that it's a way to be have a more aggressive portfolio in the target date funds. But again, the question is, are you going to have enough money to support yourself in retirement? Do you need an increase in purchasing power? And that's increasingly unlikely as your target date fund reaches its target date.
Okay. Got a question here from Efron, and he says, how about a well-diversified health care fund with so many baby boomers retiring? Secondly, what is the magic number in order to retire? 8 times your final salary amount? This is question mark. And he's talking about a couple of things here. One, diversifying the options in the TSP. Right now they're limited to stock, bond, and treasury funds. Very good treasury fund, the G fund. Not exciting, not sexy, but it never has a bad day. A lot of people wanted that portfolio to be expanded. They want more choices. A few years ago, they wanted REITs, Real Estate Investment Trust. You don't hear them saying that anymore, although they've come back. But they wanted gold funds. They wanted funds where minority-owned businesses were concentrated. They wanted green funds. You name it, there's somebody that wants a piece of that pie. And that's an issue that's up to the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board of Directors. So far, other than the expansions they've had with the target funds, they have not approved any increases. But what about that question? He says, what's your magic number? How much should you have in the TSP when you retire? Is it, you know, when they talk about life? Yeah, talk about life.
You know, again, this is a financial planning question, and I would give a different answer for different people. It depends upon how much money they're going to need from their investments and when they're going to need it. You know, if you're a CSRS employee and you're retiring with an 80% annuity and you're moving to, you know, Florida or West Virginia, you're unlikely to need any money from your investments. So you could probably retire with no money in the TSP. If you're a FERS employee, you're quite likely to need money from your investments to live on at some point in time. But the question is when, how long do you expect to be able to live on your annuity and your Social Security? In general, I would say for the average non-federal worker, 8 times your salary is not going to be enough. We're looking at more than 10 times maybe. Another way to look at this and what's more commonly used in financial planning is that once you start taking money out of your investments, if you start out taking more than 4%, your investments are unlikely to last 30 years. Now, if you only need the money for 10 or 15 years, you know, that's fine. If you're retiring at 60 or 65, you could easily be alive in 30 years. So it's called the 4% rule, Mike, and mm-hmm. It means that if you have $500,000 and you wanted to start taking money out at 65, if you start out taking more than $20,000 a year, you're at risk of running out of investments.
Especially if you're in something like the G fund, too.
Especially. See, the 4% rule actually assumes that you keep more than 60% of your money in stocks throughout your retirement. There's no, and this is my problem with the L funds, there's no academic evidence, there's no evidence at all that having 80% of your money in things like the G and the F fund is going to maximize the amount of money you can get out of your investments. Just the opposite. The evidence has been that you need to keep more than 60% in stocks in order to be able to have your investments last over very long periods of time. So to me, the L funds just make it increasingly difficult for people to have a successful retirement.
I see you brought your sheet that you give federal workers when you're giving them financial advice, and the section on the TSP is really fascinating. I'm gonna steal this from you if
okay.
I may. But you have a section in there about a Roth versus a regular TSP, and of course that is an option now. An awful lot of people, myself included, don't really understand it. What's the deal on that?
Well, the Roth is a great option. I'm very glad the TSP was able to introduce it, and the Roth TSP option is only available for employee contributions. You can't use it for the
match.
And the money that goes into that, unlike the regular TSP, the contributions are not tax deductible, so they don't reduce your taxable income. The big advantage is that when you take the money out, there's no tax on the withdrawals. And that's a huge advantage because, you know, when you take money out of the regular TSP, you're going to pay whatever your regular income tax is. It's going to increase your taxable income, which can increase the amount that you pay in Social Security taxes. It can increase the monthly cost of Medicare and various other things. So I think the Roth is a great option, and I hope a lot of people are taking advantage of it, especially younger people.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Age is an issue.
Age matters.
Take a short break here on Federal News Radio. Be right back talking with Arthur Stein about the TSP.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. Gout is an extremely painful and sometimes disabling ailment. What happens with gout is there's a buildup of uric acid crystals in and around joints. Traditionally, physicians check for gout by using a needle to draw fluid from around the affected joints to check for crystals, but
we often see patients that have been labeled with, for instance, rheumatoid arthritis or some other type of inflammatory arthritis because initial routine testing looking at the joint fluid had missed the correct diagnosis.
Mayo Clinic Dr. Tim Bongartz recently led a study which found use of high-tech images, CT scans, can help confirm a diagnosis if gout is suspected.
Patients who had ongoing symptoms for quite a while, already had an aspiration that was negative, but the physician is still suspecting a high likelihood of gout. I think that would be the right patient for doing the test.
For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Tracy McCray.
WTOP and the Washington Wizards are looking for the best junior broadcaster in D.C. Your child can join me, Dave Johnson, along with Glenn Consor as we call the Wizards-Houston Rockets game Saturday, February 23rd at Verizon Center. Plus, you'll get 4 tickets to the game and dinner in the press room. To enter, kids between the ages of 8 and 14 can submit an essay telling us why they should become our Wizards junior broadcaster. We're taking entries through January 18th. For all the rules, details, and to enter, visit WTOP.com, search junior broadcaster. Good luck.
Hey, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis from the wildly popular and always topical Foodie and the Beast.
Next Sunday, January 13th, we are kicking it off with coffee. Joel Finkelstein is in. He is the owner and head roaster at Quala Coffee. We're going to talk wine with Mira Winery out of California. And Joe Nathan is back. We're talking sips and sups.
That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live at 11 on 1500 AM.
Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Security is what they do. With Ackerman, you get the professionalism of the Washington area's only UL and CSAA 5-Diamond Certified Monitoring Center for just $18.95 a month. If you're paying more, you can switch for free and start saving today. Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive up to 3 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Boron.
If you or your pet ever get stuck by a porcupine quill, you'll see how firmly they stick in skin. So engineers are mimicking their structure to seal wounds. Porcupine quills have backward-facing barbs, but Jeff Karp, a bioengineer at Harvard Medical School, says while evolution designed them to be hard to remove once they penetrate tissue,
just a slight brush against it is enough to have these quills insert very easily into the tissue.
That won't be good for you if you run across the animal, but Karp thought the concept would work well in a bandage, so he's engineered plastic quills into
a tape that could easily easily just be pressed into tissue, and then it would exhibit very strong levels of adhesion.
I know what you're thinking. Great, how do I get it off? CARP says not to worry. They'd be biodegradable or
change their mechanical properties over time, so it would be much easier to remove.
To find out more, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He is a financial planner based in Bethesda, Maryland, and been talking about TSP and different strategies. Lauren had really a two-parter, and I skipped the first part of her question. Lauren is out in Beltsville, Maryland, and she said, I sympathize with the G-Fund guy, the man that played it safe and stayed in the G-Fund. I'm not quite that risk-averse, but I've always kept what I call my nest egg in the G-Fund, probably about a fifth or a sixth of my TSP, which is around $400,000. And that's sad because I've been working 22 years and always contributed at least the 5% and often more. So she's fully invested in the pretty much in the G-Fund. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, that she's just not getting the rate of return that is necessary to increase her purchasing power. And, you know, it's just a question of being too conservative. Now, she might have investments outside the TSP. And if she does, and she just wants that to be the conservative part of her investment, the ultra-conservative part, G-Fund's great for that because it has such a high rate of return. I mean, you cannot find a money market account or a savings account in the private sector that has a rate of return as high as the G fund. So I do have, you know, clients who, especially when they're retired, they treat their G fund investment as their emergency fund instead of keeping it in a savings account or money market fund because, you know, savings accounts and money market funds, they're paying like a 0.5% interest or something like really ridiculous. They can keep the money in the G fund. If they have an emergency, they can take it out. They don't. They're getting a very high rate of return for such a riskless investment.
And high rate of return, of course, is a relative thing.
Yeah, because I mean, it's 1.75%.
Yeah, that's
last year. 1.5% last year.
Yeah. So that's we remember the days when it was 9 and 10.
But yeah.
Then your problem is inflation. So someone like Lauren, would you advise her? 22 years. She's probably got, you know, 5, 6, 10 to go. She's obviously under the FERS retirement system because she said she put in 5%, which is enough to get the match, which is smart, not leaving that 5% tax-deferred pay raise on the table. Should she maybe allocate her new contributions?
Yeah, I would say this. One, it would be nice if she could put in more than 5%. And two, just go ahead and allocate the new contributions differently than the existing contributions. And just put all your new contributions in the C and the S and the I fund. You're putting that in every 2 weeks at very small amounts, and you don't have to worry about fluctuations because you don't have a lot at risk, and you still have this huge amount in the G fund, and so your portfolio really is not going to fluctuate in value.
Yeah. Now, and everybody should be investing. I mean, if there's any way you
absolutely
can invest, everybody should be investing.
Especially FERS employees. I mean, you absolutely want to put in 5% because then the government matches that with 5%. You've doubled your money and you haven't done anything except put in 5%.
And hardly anybody in the private sector now gets a matching contribution of any kind, much less 5%.
It's very rare. I mean, the federal retirement system for FERS employees, the only thing better is CSRS, but it is a great deal. You've got 70% health insurance subsidy, and you've got the 5% match on the TSP, and another thing, you get your pension, you get your annuity, you get Social Security. And another big advantage for federal employees, and this is not true of all employees, but most federal employees, at least it's my understanding, you don't have to retire at a certain point in time. So if financially you're not sure your situation, you can postpone retirement. That's a huge advantage.
Yeah, and Lauren just called in, by the way, and she said she's got about a fifth or a sixth of her money in the G fund. So that's
Lauren, that's even better.
Yeah.
You know, as I said, if, you know, the fifth or a sixth you have in the G fund is your emergency fund or your safe money, that's a great place for it. I don't happen to think the F fund is a great place for it. That's the bond fund. because if interest rates increase, and everyone thinks that they will at some point in time, the value of your investment in the F fund is going to go down. And how significantly it will go down depends upon how much interest rates go up. That's not true of the G fund. If interest rates go up or down, the value of the money that you have in there does not change.
Right. And as you say, too, that people need to consider after you retire, if you're a federal worker, you have the Civil Service Retirement Fund or the FERS annuity. They don't like the term pension, but you have that, and they are indexed in full or in part to inflation. Many people have Social Security as well, which is indexed fully to inflation. This January, this month, the raise, I believe, is 1.7%. So that jives nicely with the 1.5 that the G fund is paying, but it's still not enough to keep pace with inflation.
Yeah, absolutely. See, even without taking into account taxes, because you're going to pay taxes on the money you take out, the G fund, the purchasing power, the increase in value is less than the inflation rate, so the purchasing power went down. And, you know, I know I'm harping on this a lot, but you know, people are going to be retired for decades. In many cases, it's decades before they're even going to retire. So these decreases in purchasing power over time, they add up, and it's compound interest, and it gets to be extremely significant. And when I did my stamp example, I mean, you saw over a 20-year period an 85% decline in purchasing power.
Right.
I mean,
it would be worse with other things. Take a short break here on Federal News Radio. We'll be right back.
Best of the Atlantic 10 Conference comes to the Charles E. Smith Center in Foggy Bottom in 2013. Get your GW Basketball Conference plan today and watch the Colonials take on Temple, Butler, Dayton, and more. Get all 8 conference games for as low as $80 when you visit gwsports.com/tickets or call 202-994-7325. GW Basketball. Raise high the Buff and Blue.
Federal employees receive 15% off select Sprint monthly services and for a limited time may be eligible to receive a $50 service credit when they switch a line to Sprint. Visit a Sprint retail store in your area and mention where you work to find out if you are eligible or visit Sprint.com/Fed. That's Sprint.com/FED.
Coverage not available everywhere ends 4/10/13, subject to 2-year agreement, activation and early termination fees and other restrictions. Service credit will be credited within 3 invoices. Restrictions apply.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
There's a sea change going on now, and you're seeing the slow death of the desktop. Microsoft, they defined their future in terms of mobile. You know, Windows 8 came out, it supports all the touch screen. They've got the Windows Surface portable device. Google has a portable device. Of course, everybody's trying to play catch up with Apple. And so now we are moving into an accelerated phase of the post-PC.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
What is the U.S. Census Bureau's technology innovation strategy? How is Census using new technologies to improve services and products? What is Census doing to leverage innovation and advances in technology while balancing the stewardship between innovation and technology? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Avi Bender, Chief Technology Officer, U.S. Census Bureau, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Ben Shaw, Industrial Security Officer with MTN Government Services. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the premier law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients across the country. For more information on the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to FedTalk at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Bill Bransford will be joined by the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund to discuss law enforcement trends and statistics from 2012.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for January is the Literacy Lab, a local nonprofit that's closing the achievement gap by providing 300 low-income children with individualized reading instruction, getting them up to grade level, and ensuring they can succeed in school. The Literacy Lab's trained instructors work closely with schools to diagnose reading difficulties and missing foundational pieces of phonics, fluency, and comprehension. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey, and thanks again to Arthur Stein for being here and giving us some financial advice. He said take the long view when you're looking at stocks. Look at the 10-year averages, not the most recent ones or year-to-date kinds of things, and that gives you a better picture of how things tend to work out. Coming up, I guess, are Sean Riley and Steve Losey from the Federal Times. Got a lot of stuff to talk about. After our brief hiatus for Christmas and New Year's. Gents, are you there?
We're here. How are you?
Good. Good. Welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Yeah. Listen. Hey. Well, we know what Congress did, which is what it does best, and that is nothing. Where are we in that?
Well, the as everybody knows, the temporary fiscal cliff deal was struck over New Year's that pretty much only settles the tax increase issue. But as far as the things that federal employees are concerned on, it does next to nothing. It kicks the sequestration can down the road another 2 months. It doesn't resolve the debt ceiling issue, which could potentially result in a government shutdown, maybe as early as mid-February. And there's also still the expiration of the six-month continuing resolution at the end of March that's going to result in another knockdown, drag out brawl over government spending. So those are three, mini fiscal cliffs that are still on the horizon and could endanger federal employees.
Well, a while back I would have said that the idea of a government shutdown is just more Washington theatrics. We have the crisis du jour, the sky is falling in, we worry about it, lobbyists are mobilized, unions go out there, corporations spend money, the media proclaims gloom and doom, and then nothing happens. But we have had government shutdowns in the past during the when President Clinton was in office, and that two famous showdowns with the Republican leadership in the House.
That's right, and we came very close in 2011 during the last debt ceiling mess, and it's that time again. So who knows whether it's actually going to happen. We do know that congressional Republicans are feeling very stung over the fiscal cliff deal that they see granted Obama a good chunk of the tax increases he was pushing for, but got them next to nothing as far as spending cuts. So people like Pat Toomey, Senator Toomey of Pennsylvania, and especially Mitch McConnell, the top Republican in the Senate, are saying, are making noises about being willing to shut down the government over the debt ceiling if they don't get the spending cuts they feel they deserve.
Well, you know, if the past is prologue and these shutdowns we've had in the past, people were furloughed, and it was for a matter of days, maybe up to a week at a time. But when they came back to work, they did get retroactive pay, so they didn't lose anything.
There's no guarantee of that. That would ultimately be up to Congress. They were reimbursed back in 95, 96. But that would, in the case of a shutdown, require Congress to say, yes, you know, it wasn't your fault. Here's your back pay. And if you recall, when a couple thousand Federal Aviation Administration employees were furloughed a year or so ago, Congress did not. They were out for about 2 weeks in 2011. Congress did not approve back pay for them. What ultimately happened is that FAA's parent agency, the Transportation Department, decided it could reimburse them without congressional approval. Congress didn't object, so they did get they were compensated for the lost time. But there is no guarantee, in the event of a furlough, that employees considered quote unquote non-essential will in fact receive the salary they lost in the meantime.
Yeah, that's a good point, because they were considered, I guess, medical people, but they weren't essential in the sense of air traffic controllers.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, all right, the question of furloughs comes up. I got a lengthy email from a federal worker, and he had a worst-case scenario. I think he must be one of those preppers as well, who's looking for the end of the earth, end of civilization as we know it. But he was talking about 22-day furlough, consecutive days, what would happen to things like health insurance, life insurance, deductions, naturally pay, and that sort of thing. And I'm going to reply to him, but I wanted to run it by you guys. If there is a furlough, the odds of it being any consecutive days, more than one, at 1 week or one every two, are slim and none, I would think.
Well, as it happens, the Office of Personnel Management put out a lot of guidance available on its website last month. And the gist of it is that agencies would have considerable discretion in deciding not only who to furlough, but how to structure that furlough. You know, according to OPM, it could be, say, 1 day per pay period, or agencies could basically shut down operations for a certain amount of time. There's no guarantee, you know, there's no requirement that the furlough last, you know, 22 consecutive days, essentially a whole month. But agencies would have that option if they chose to take it.
I would think that for a variety of reasons, but up to and including self-preservation, that no agency head that likes the mission would want to shut down for a week and let the world know that we could do without them for a week or two.
Well, I would presume not. And I have to say, for agencies, this will be a heck of a management challenge. Presumably, they wouldn't want to just cease operations for a certain amount of time. On the other hand, I mean, you could see from, and I'm not saying they would take this, but you know, from a political perspective, it would show, you know, it would be a sign that you know, to the public and to Congress that you know, these cuts do make a difference. They are very difficult, you know, they are hard to deal with, and they do have an impact.
Yeah, because you get these situations where an agency's threatened to shut down, you know, they call them the Washington Monument cut, but you have this phenomena at the end of the fiscal year, the use it or lose it, the spend it or lose the appropriation. And I would think in a situation like this, if you could shut down any federal agency for 2 weeks and maybe nobody noticed, that it might not reopen.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'm...
No, I'm just thinking that you're saying what you can do, what the world can do without us.
Okay, I see. But I think, you know, it could also show, I mean, if Social Security Administration shut down
exactly
for a week or two, I think people would notice.
Yes.
Pretty quickly.
Yes.
And
yeah,
as far as your reader's question, as far as benefits, even if there were a extended furlough, I don't think benefits or health care or anything like that would cease.
Okay.
That's not.
Now, OPM actually said, you know, the life insurance burden would continue, and so would health benefits. But, you know, both parties, though, would continue to be responsible for paying their respective shares.
Yeah. It could be a real, as you say, an administrative nightmare for a lot of people. Couple of months back, most of us were saying that the long-feared retirement tsunami had apparently was upon us and hit us. And then something funny happened in December, right?
Yeah, the retirement wave seems to have kind of plateaued in 2011. 2012. 2011, we saw a 24% spike over the previous year. And as 2000, you know, in the first couple of months of 2012, it looked like, you know, it was continuing to crest. But once things kind of slowed down the last 6-7 months of the year, and 2012 ended up with only a 1.7% increase over 2011. Now, that is still 26% above where we were 2 years ago. So it's not to say that people are, you know, stopping their retirements, but things seem to have kind of tapered off a bit. Now, I was talking to some people about why that may be so, and maybe some people were expecting the possible end of the pay freeze in this year, and maybe hoping to put off their retirements a couple of months and kind of tick up their high three just a bit more. It may be that people, you know, saw that President Obama got reelected and thought, okay, well, maybe maybe this won't mean major changes. Maybe I'll ride it out a little bit longer. So there's a lot of things that may be going on there, but the retirement wave isn't getting any worse. Now, it may be another year or two before things start going down. So the retirements are going to likely stay high for the next year or two, and federal agencies and managers should be looking at their strategic workforce plans, looking at trying to figure out who is going to retire in the next year or so, and how you're going to replace them, how you're going to do without these people who've spent their entire career in your office. So even though things have slowed down, it's not something managers can slack off on.
I know you've written about this flex schedule program, and that apparently it's not doing very well. Would you explain what it is and what's the problem?
Yeah, there was a program called ROW, Results Only Work Environment, that OPM started testing about in 2010. Basically, it was going to let federal employees, the 400 or so OPM employees that tested it, choose when and where they work, give them absolute authority to do their work anywhere, anytime, as long as they got it done. John Barry, the director of OPM, hyped it a lot. He had high hopes for it. He said, you know, this is going to hopefully change the way the federal government operates. And then it kind of petered out, and you didn't really hear anything more of it. I FOIA'd the final report from OPM, that Deloitte did for OPM, and it found that there were some serious problems in how this program actually worked. It did improve morale, but the productivity in some cases, especially for mid-range employees, lower-performing employees, slumped considerably. Managers weren't given the right enough feedback, so employees didn't know whether they were getting it done. And it seems to have not done so well, seems to have kind of sidetracked the effort to expand flexible scheduling within the government for the time being, at least.
Well, that's always interesting, because anecdotally you're told that people are on flex time, especially when they work from home, that that productivity increases dramatically, that people do better and they actually wind up working more because they're comfortable with it and they don't want to let a job go unfinished. But the actual data shows the opposite, doesn't it?
Yeah, at least in this instance, the top quarter of the top performing 25% of the employees who tested, their productivity increased in some cases considerably in how many cases they processed. Pension cases they processed a day, and how long it took them to process cases. But in many cases, the middle 50%, the bottom 25% fell. And I talked to the person who created this ROW project for Best Buy. She was a private sector person. Started she and her partner and her friend her partner started doing this privately, and they said they think that it speaks to broader performance management problems in the federal government, that the federal government doesn't do enough to hold poor performers accountable. Jody Thompson, the former Best Buy person who created it, said that if someone isn't performing in a government person isn't performing in a ROW environment, the solution isn't, oh, we should take the row away from them and put them back on a 9-to-5 schedule. The solution should be punishing them, perhaps firing them if necessary.
Okay, Steve, you get the last word. Thank you very much. Thank you guys for being with us. A reminder, our shows are archived here on our homepage, so you can listen to this show or any others at any time. We'll see you next Wednesday. Have a good week and buckle up.